It's time to experience the Synergy Connection Show with your host, Lucy Forsting.
Well, welcome everyone to our very special recording today. And I'm with Doug Warner. And Doug and I have done several different podcasts. Mm-hmm. I think we're up to about four.
I think so.
For the Synergy Connection show itself. But today we're going to be talking about something that I believe is near and dear to every one of us out there listening, and that is love. And it doesn't have to be Valentine's Day or Christmas or a birthday or anything else. It's just that, you know, love is really, I believe, why we're here, why we are alive. We didn't get here in most circumstances unless there was some love expression, you know, that was made between two individuals. Mm-hmm. And 9 months later, you know, out you come. And your introduction into the world as we know it is hopefully full of love, a lot of cuddling and a mm-hmm. lot of meeting of your needs as an infant. But we're going to call this show Developing Your Never-Ending Love Story. And my first question, and Doug and I have talked about this a little bit before we actually get started in our dialogue, but my question to those of you out there listening is, did you always feel that there was something missing, even though you loved your partner? And the reason I ask that is that as a trained professional therapist over 35 years, I would hear this over and over again. I would hear somebody say, male or female, I love my partner tremendously, but there's something missing, and I don't know what it is. And I guess my next question is, was communication between you and your loved one difficult? You know, in this regard, it would be like sharing your feelings with somebody and not really even understanding what you want or what you need yourself. So you know that there's something missing, but you're not sure what it is. And as a result, it's very difficult to share that concept with the person that you still love. And the third thing is, does it feel like the task is simply too difficult to even tackle? And I had probably hundreds over the 35 years that I've been a therapist where the person would say, you know what, it would just be easier to move on. I think I'm going to file for divorce. Or I think we're going to separate. And that is because, again, you don't know what it is you want. You can't express it. And to try to figure out how to get from where you are to where you want to go is just too painful and too difficult. So if you're listening to this program, I think that this is one that will help you understand what you can do so that you'll be able to have that never-ending love story, you know, that is rightfully yours. It can be yours. And I believe this is a recipe for a lifetime, and it can be passed down from generation to generation, because if a child grows up in a home where they see love being expressed on a daily basis, then they take that with them into adulthood, and they know what they're looking for in their partner. And what would happen, or what would our world look like if it was truly based on love, which I believe is the reason that all of us are alive, is to spread love into the world. But we have to have love in our life in order to spread it. You know, it doesn't happen otherwise. So we have four legs that we're going to look at, and the first two legs today in this first recording is going to be the mental leg and the emotional leg. And the other two legs are the physical, sexual at times, intimacy at times, but that leg and the spiritual. So if you kind of think about this like a table or a chair that has four legs on it. You've sat in a chair before, I'm sure, where one of those legs did not quite touch the ground, and so it wobbled. Or you've been around a table where one of the legs maybe was a little uneven, and it wobbled. And that is what happens in our relationships, is that if we do not keep those four legs balanced, then they become wobbly, the relationship becomes wobbly. So Doug and I are going to talk about how to keep the legs balanced and the components that are in those legs so that you can better understand how to truly develop this beautiful, loving relationship and one that can last for a lifetime. So Doug, thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me here.
I think that we have such an amazing chemistry between us when we talk about, you know, things that are important, mm-hmm. you know, for people to understand and know. And we can bounce things back and forth. And you're coming from a really good masculine base with sensitivity thrown in for good measure. And of course, you know, my background allows me to kind of go both ways too. There are times when I've had to be very strong, and there are other times where I can be sensitive. And so it's a nice combo
I think so.
So as we look at that first leg, the mental leg, what do you think? What runs through your mind as far as keeping that one balanced?
I think, well, there's a number of things here, but I think one of the things that we've talked about is this perception of equality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, kind of starting, that's kind of foundational, I believe, in part in the mental leg, is that you don't go into the relationship thinking one side, one person feeling they're dominant, if mm-hmm. you want to say that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm better or I'm dominant, and this kind of thing. Equality is, it doesn't mean sameness,
right?
Obviously, I mean, in whatever kind of relationship, this isn't just male-female, it could be any loving relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So the sense of equality to me is very important. I was fortunate enough when I was growing up, my parents, you know, what you talked about, how we grow up, hopefully in a loving environment, and I was very fortunate that I did grow up. My parents were very loving to each other.
So you saw that.
My parents modeled that. As I've gotten older, and I'm a parent, I've got two grown kids, and I'm a grandfather, so I was fortunate enough to have that good modeling when mm-hmm. I was being raised.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw them physically, you know, hug and, you know, just appropriate stuff. And it was like, okay. So I was able to bring that into my marriages and for my children. And I've seen so many guys that I've run into they did not have the modeling. And unfortunately, I have a number of younger folks, I say younger than me, I mean, I'm almost 65, but who are in their mid-30s and being raised with only one parent,
mm-hmm.
and usually the mom.
Usually the mom, so they don't have that male figure.
They're not having the male figure, or they don't have that continuity of a male figure. So there's a leg there I can see,
mm-hmm.
and it's wobbly in them,
mm-hmm.
because they haven't had the role modeling of just intimacy, male-female intimacy, for instance.
Do they recognize that it's wobbly?
Yeah.
And sort of that sense of, I'm uncomfortable because I want more, but I'm not sure how to get more?
Oh, absolutely. They recognize it, just like you asked the question.
Mm-hmm.
They recognize something's missing, and a lot of them, and I've talked to some women, most of the guys that come to me are guys.
Right.
And they're saying, hey, you know, I'm 35, I'm 36 or whatever, and I'm going through girlfriends, you know, and it's, you know, on paper they look great, you know, they're attractive, whatever it is.
Right.
They're intelligent, educated, whatever they're looking for. But I think they've missed a component.
And do they not know what the component is?
A lot of times they don't know what they're missing. I mean, they can say, oh, well, maybe, you know, I was raised by my mom, or I grew up in a dysfunctional family. They can recognize that, because they don't have the experience, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what they're... It's a feeling.
It is a feeling.
It's a feeling.
And they don't know what to do with feelings.
And feelings, right. And so they turn to some toxic masculine behavior sometimes.
Like drinking.
They also...
sports. A lot of them get involved with sports because they think, well, maybe that's the answer.
Yeah. Or they get on some of these dating, they watch these videos, and there's a lot of toxic stuff out about, you know, how to pick up women and all this other kind of stuff that's there. I realize there's a whole world out there of stuff. I haven't looked at them, but anyway. So the point is that equality, I think they have a hard time with understanding what equality means in a relationship. And I think for me, the word that comes to mind is humility. I think one component, I've learned this through my own experience by not doing it correctly and then figuring it out and having to mm-hmm. do it, is when it's time for to be strong, mm-hmm. you know, you help, you do your thing, you're strong in a relationship or anywhere in life. But when you need help,
being able to ask for it,
to be able to let someone else help you,
right?
Because ultimately it's loving, because you're giving them an opportunity to be strong,
right?
Which is a gift. Yeah. And there's just going to be this dance, I think, of equality, of net taking and net giving. I said there's in times in our lives, you know, you're going to be taking more than you're giving. Mm-hmm. Right? For instance, when you're being raised, you're a kid. Mm-hmm. But then you get to another point in life where now you may have to be, then you're giving more than you're taking. As long as it gets balanced out.
Well, here's a way also to look at some of that is understanding the compromise, understanding how to collaborate with one another, because I've seen relationships where there's deference. It's like if it has to do with the home or the mm-hmm. kids, then the other partner, you know, the male partner, kind of says, well, she has more expertise, you know, mm-hmm. or my wife has more expertise in that area, and I'll let her make the decisions. Mm-hmm. And then if it had to do with the car or finances or maybe the house repairs or something sure. like that, then the concept is, oh, well, then that's a masculine side. Right. And quite often, they work together.
It
doesn't have to be you take care of this and you take care of this. It needs to be discussed as to what is the best way.
Right. Exactly. Who's got the skill? So, and I think the other thing is to consistently, this could, you asked me what components were in that mental, and I think is valuing, truly valuing what the other person has to offer. And mm-hmm. communicating that to them.
Mm-hmm. How do you communicate it, do you think?
My wife and I, the way I do, I mean, I tell her.
I really like the way you did that?
Or I just thank her for, you know, what she's doing. You know, there's times that in our marriage, and I've been married 25 years at this time, I said, you know, there's times that I've been making more money than she did. And then there were times, because I worked for myself, there was ebbs and flows in my income. Mm-hmm. And then she's making more money than mm-hmm. what she does. Mm-hmm. And so we have this flow. And I, you know, when she's, I'm not always the 100% breadwinner type mm-hmm. of thing. So mm-hmm. it's not that role. And I, hey, when she's taking, you know, she's doing that or she's working harder or whatever, mm-hmm. I really value it, because I do value it. I mean, I feel it. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel less than.
You don't feel less than.
I don't feel less than. Okay. I think that's another thing, is being secure in yourself enough so you're not being threatened.
Right. And if we go back to like the 40s, for instance, the 50s, the 60s, where it was the two martini lunches and the guys were, you know, smoking the cigars and the cigarettes and, you know, the little wife was at home. Archie Bunker. I mean, that was such a perfect example Edith waiting until Archie came home and making sure his dinner was on the table. Well, and how many of the 70 something, you know, guys out there grew up with that image, or the gals, you know, that maybe mm-hmm. grew up with that. And we have this whole Me Too movement, mm-hmm. you know, right now, where all of a sudden women are saying, no, I have value. I'm not just mm-hmm. a pretty face or mm-hmm. a good figure. And so there's this shuffling that's happening with people discovering their worth, you know, and that comes back to equality, is feeling like I bring to the table more than.
Yeah.
And then you fill in the blanks.
And it's not just money.
Right.
Although when we say value, I mean, there's so many things that people bring into the relationship that are of value mm-hmm. that we need to recognize those. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes, like you said, how you were raised. I was born in the 50s. And, you know, so that whole Archie Bunkery thing. That my parents weren't that, though. And, it's kind of funny, because my parents weren't that. My dad, you know. They were both artists, and
So they were in touch with their soft sides too.
You know, I watched my dad. You know, when he was in the Marine Corps in World War II, and went through all sorts of stuff. And
oh yeah.
And I, you know, he he was somewhat physically, not because he was a big guy, but somehow he just had an aura that other men were a little intimidated by him for some reason. But if there was a baby in a room, if somebody had a baby, mm-hmm. you turn around, my dad would always be holding the baby.
Aww.
So you saw that, you know, that...
that soft side.
That soft side. Mm-hmm. And so I saw that early on.
You know what? I will bet that the babies all love to be held by him because babies sense.
Oh, yeah.
And they can see that aura that we lose the ability to see as we age.
Yep.
And so, but they can still see it. And I'll bet they were mesmerized by him.
They were. And I think that that's kind of... once again, that was a modeling of something. I watched that mm-hmm. and I paid attention to it. Uh-huh. So I learned early on that that's not a sign of weakness. That
no.
type of thing is not a sign of weakness. Mm-hmm. And I've tried to communicate that to my kids as well. I think I have. I think just valuing what the other person brings to the table, communicate that, validate them. Mm-hmm. We all want to be validated, you know, for our efforts. And not just patted on the back, but really insightfully call out what the value is.
Let's look at another quality that comes out with, you know, this whole mental side. Mm-hmm. And it's part of the emotional mm-hmm. as well, mm-hmm. but resiliency.
Oh,
because
yeah.
life is going to deal us a lot of blows that we're just not prepared for. And when we think life is going along beautifully is usually when that happens. And so it's so important in this particular case, as far as I'm concerned, for both sides, male and female, to have that resilient quality that when life deals you a blow, that you can get back up again. But from where you sit, what do you see as far as how does the male or the female show resiliency? You know, what do they need to do?
That's a great question. In fact, I had long discussions on this idea of resiliency, especially now with a number of my students and some workshops I've done. It just definition-wise, resilience to me is, and I think this is kind of a textbook definition, the ability to adapt and respond mm-hmm. effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And adapting, I think it's the hardships, the things life throws you, kind of strips you down to your bare-bones soul.
Mm-hmm.
You may lose your job, you may lose
your health.
Your health. So you really have to have a sense of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And strengthen the relationship to start with is important. Weak relationships are not going to stand the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from the mental side, communicating. I think communication skills, listening skills are a big part of resilience because you're not surviving alone. You're
right.
surviving together.
Right.
And almost inevitably, you're stronger together than you are individually.
Right.
So you have to see that.
I think seeing and feeling it.
Yeah,
you know, and in many, many cases, there is this, I don't even know how to describe it. There's like an unspoken word. And so either partner may look at the other one and say, well, they know that I'm there for them. Or they know that I love them.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-uh. Mm-hmm. Doesn't work that way.
No, no.
No. I think people need to feel touch. They need to feel that the word is there. So it's the reassurance of having someone say, I love you. You know, you mean the world to me. And hearing those words. Because mm-hmm. if you don't hear them, you begin to wonder, are they still there? And so maybe, you know, they said their vows 20 years ago, 10 years
yeah.
ago, 3 years ago. And so the wife and or the husband kind of make this assumption, which is all about making an ass out of you and me. But, you know, there's an assumption that they just know. Well, no, they don't.
They don't.
They don't.
It's funny because I grew up Catholic and we had a priest that married my parents said... I remember he was over at the house, and I remember my dad just broke out into laughter. I think both my mom and my dad. And the priest said, and they were somehow the conversation was coming in this direction now. And the priest said, if I ever had gotten married, I feel that I only had to say I love you once.
Oh wow!
and then my wife should assume that unless something changed, that's the case. And both my parents sat there and the table just broke out in the laughter, and they said something to the effect that that's why you're a priest. That's why you're a priest. That's not going to work. No. That's not going to work. I think learning to communicate appropriately, listening, and not just listening with, most of the time we find it that we don't listen. Mm-hmm. We don't really listen. We're thinking about what we want to say next.
Exactly.
And I used to tell I taught middle school for a while, and when I ask a question of the class, everybody's got their hand up. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I call in a student, and the student starts to answer. And while that student is answering, I've got other hands they're shooting up. And I told them, I said, you know, guys, is that there's an anatomical connection between your arm, the muscles in your arm, and your sense of hearing. Uh-huh. I said, when your arm is up like that, you can't hear what the other person's saying.
No, that's true.
And of course, I was joking about the anatomy part, but we're always, so really being able to listen without reacting.
Right.
Responding, but not reacting. I think, so we talked about resiliency. I think learning to be less reactive, see how we are reactive in our relationships, and be a little more, there's tools we can use to become less reactive and learn to respond more appropriately, more lovingly.
Mm-hmm. That's really true. I have said in many, many a counseling session, as God gave us two ears so that we could listen twice as much as we speak,
right.
With one mouth.
right, one mouth, use them proportionally.
Right.
I think also one of the things that these listening skills is that especially when things get tough, you know, arguments tend to become more possible. And one of the things I think we all have that we have to put in check are triggers.
Absolutely. And knowing what those triggers are. I mean, for me, I just recently, in the last few days, had done a little bit of an exercise with myself. You know, understanding that in a relationship that I am in, that there are triggers. And there are very specific ones. And it only is in one area. The other areas of our life are just absolutely beautiful. But in one area, there are specific triggers. And so I listed them. And I thought, you know, that's one of those things that you share. Like, when this happens, then this is how I have a tendency to respond. And I wanted him to do the same, you know, because it's like at that moment, our minds are engaged, not our hearts. And we're trying to do something that we're calling the 80-20 rule of trying to come 80% of the time from our heart and 20% of the time from our intellect. Because the tendency is when the trigger comes in, we jump right back into feeling injured and all the other things that you really don't want. Right. And you're trying to rationalize and you jump into the intellectual.
Absolutely. I think we're trained in our culture to problem solve with your brain. And when we're talking about love is not a function of the brain.
No, it's definitely not.
It's not. Love is a function of the heart, the intuitive consciousness. Uh-huh. And when words are coming from the head, they sound much different than when words are coming from the heart.
And you know what? It is not easy to figure that out.
Oh.
You know, how do you speak from the heart and not engage, you know, the brain, intellectualize?
The brain has to be, I believe, and I teach, this is a sort of the foundation, the crux of what I teach in my meditation students, is learning to access that intuitive consciousness, that heart knowing. I mean, we have neurons, I mean, brain cells.
In our heart.
In our gut, too.
Right. Our heart and our gut actually do more to control our bodies than our brain does.
Absolutely.
And most people would say, no, the brain is what controls us. That's not true.
It's not true. And
no.
That's just science.
Mm-hmm.
Although relatively new science is being found out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, I think that those triggers come up. I noticed I found triggers in my relationship came from two categories. One of them was triggers that were unique to my relationship, to my wife, this particular person. Because there's triggers they have with other people.
Right.
You know,
right.
It could be people of a certain age or people, you know, men versus women or whatever. But I also have triggers that I identified. And this was doing a lot of self-work you know, getting to a point where I teach meditation, I had to do a lot of work on myself. Mm-hmm. And I had triggers that came from all sorts of sources.
You know, How many of them came, like, from your military days?
Well, they came, a lot of them did. I spent 11 years in the Army. Started as a paratrooper and later as an intelligence officer. And a lot of triggers were in there. Of course, for 11 years, there's a very strict, very rigid identification with, I would say, almost could be in some ways toxic masculinity. That's a buzzword now, phrase, but very defined. You know, what are guys and what are women?
Right, the roles.
The roles and, you know, masculinity and macho and all this other stuff. But just growing up.
And you were a Marine, weren't you?
No, actually, my dad was a Marine. I was in the Army. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But growing up, you know, I had triggers that from growing up Catholic. There's triggers from the values that my parents instilled in me, mm-hmm. you know, or how they did things or how other people did things. I call them personal rants and cultural chants, but I think you had another word for those.
Constructs.
The constructs,
right,
yeah. Right.
So that we live with.
And I think those create triggers.
They do. Absolutely.
And I found that, oh, wow. So I found I had a lot of those things going on when in the military. When I got out of the military, I left because I was in a toxic situation. Mm-hmm. And I had to unlearn. And I went from going 11 years in the Army, and I turned around and became a massage therapist. And it's all about touch. And it's all about intuitive work. I mean, it's science as well, but it's also very much about it being intuitive and energy work, mm-hmm. you know, learning to do Reiki and therapeutic touch, and then going on with yoga and meditation. So a whole other side of me was being developed, mm-hmm. or waking up a little bit. And I knew I was self-regulating because I said, if I stay in the military, and nothing against the military, nothing against people who serve, you know, God bless all of you.
But I think a lot of your needing to leave also had to do with being in intelligence work.
Well,
the end.
It was, and it was very toxic. It was, mm-hmm. You know, it was nurturing all the wrong parts of me. Mm-hmm. It was, mm-hmm. you know, I was, if you're good at something, you don't want to be good at a lot of things. There's certain things you don't want to be good at. And I was becoming really good at some things that were not really healthy for me, mm-hmm. You know, with working with in a negative way with other people. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. leave it there. I needed healing. Mm-hmm. And so, and when you talk about touch, you know, one of the first things we learn in learning body work is your need for touch, for human touch, is the same from cradle to grave.
Right, right. And that's one of the problems 2020 had with everybody is the lack of touch.
I there's a lot of that. And a very big problem. The interesting thing is that I may have fewer students coming to my classes, mm-hmm. but I've got more massage clients.
Because they need touch.
Yeah. It's interesting. They're willing to do that. I mean, we use all the protocols, of course, but I needed healing myself first. And part of my healing was learning how to work out of that intuitive consciousness. And I had to deconstruct a lot of garbage. I had to deconstruct a lot of triggers, a lot of rigid thinking, this type of thing. Mm-hmm. So, and I learned how to communicate much better.
And I'm thinking that with a lot of guys, more than gals, you know, that whole construct, if you will, that says big boys don't cry.
Yep.
You know, just that masculine, like, you need to tough this out. You need to understand that it's going to hurt, but you're a guy. You can handle it. Okay. And it's not the same message for girls.
Right.
And so as a boy becomes a man, he distances himself in many cases from the need for touch. It becomes sex and mm-hmm. sexuality, but it doesn't become intimacy. It doesn't right. become caress. It doesn't become those kind of touches. And men need it just as much as women.
And maybe even more. And I say more, not because inherently men need it more than women or women need it more, but because women are allowed in our culture to touch mm-hmm. more freely.
That's true.
I remember in growing up, my dad, I never saw my dad hug another male other than me.
Okay.
I never saw him hug, and I never saw other
and
men
like
hug.
In Italy, they kiss each other.
And there's all sorts, all around the world, yeah, the people here, and I was in the Middle East, and there was a an Egyptian captain I was liaisoning with, and we start to walk down the walkway, and he goes and holds my hand, and my troops were with me, and I'm like, oh man, but you look around, and that was uh-huh. He was a burly paratrooper captain and all this kind of stuff. Right. It wasn't sexual. There was nothing about that. It was just what they do.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of like a friendship gesture.
It's very much a friendship gesture.
Yeah.
One of the big first things I learned coming out of the military and healing myself is I became a hugger.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing. You know, that cradle to grave need for non-sexual touch.
Right. Right.
Sexual touch is great, but that's what we're talking about. And the thing is that when people are little cute babies,
mm-hmm.
they're usually not short of getting touch.
Right.
And as they, you know, if they're fortunate enough to grow up to be attractive young men and women, mm-hmm. they're going to get touch. But you start to get older, and I worked with hospice for 6 years as a volunteer. You know, mm-hmm. working with people they're sick. They're elderly. They don't look as good as they used to, mm-hmm. you know, from some standards.
Mm-hmm.
They need a touch just as much as that baby did.
Right. And it can't just be holding their hand.
No.
You know, I know there's a lot of people that talk about somebody who's dying, and they will crawl into the hospital bed with them and
yeah.
hold them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's terribly, I don't think it's painful at that point, as much as it is frightening. And just that reassurance that it is going to be okay, and
yep.
life doesn't just begin and end with birth and death, but there's a transition. There's a time when you move on, and you're not visible anymore. But
right.
it doesn't mean that
you're alone.
And you're alone. And we come into our life alone, and we're going to go out alone.
That's right. But in that resilience, building that resiliency in the relationship, I think that is a great communicator, though, is touch.
Mm-hmm.
And people who may, not, even if I know there's a lot of guys that I know just don't, they didn't grow up that way. Even
mm-hmm.
younger guys,
mm-hmm.
touch just wasn't in the matrix, it wasn't in the formula of what they understood. But I had to do work in that area for myself, coming
mm-hmm.
out of a non-touching...
Do you think that's why, in part, you chose massage?
Oh, absolutely.
Because it forced you to touch.
I'm going to say there's probably been two or three times in my life, well, more than two or three times, where I actually was called to do something.
Uh-huh.
And that was one thing I was called to do, because I had no idea what I was going to do when I resigned from the military.
Had you ever had a massage before you went into the military?
One. And that was in Germany, and I do believe that the massage therapist was a lady. I think she was a sumo wrestler, and she beat the snot out of me. And
she was doing deep tissue.
She was doing something. I don't know what she was doing, but I think a body slam was somehow involved in this. It didn't. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to run out and do this again. I don't know. I got to Florida. I came to Florida, and that's what I wanted to do. That's what I want to do. And I've been doing it for 27 years. So
it
was the right thing for me. And I did it for me first, to be honest. I wasn't out there trying to heal the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I always wanted to do something positive, and I wanted to do something from the heart. I wanted to do something that was going to develop my heart knowing.
I want us to move into the emotional life
mm-hmm.
for a minute. Because one of the things that is truly important for people listening to this program is to understand that you can't have just one leg operational. You know, it is going to be all four legs, and we have to basically feed or fill each leg as we grow. So if you figure that you're beginning to fill it, you know, as an infant with little things, and then as you get into toddlerhood and into, you know, school age and middle school, high school, you know, maybe college. But certainly as we age, you never stop filling the legs, you know, because we continue to grow ideally. So we're going to jump over into the emotional leg, because
mm-hmm.
that is a huge area that we either fill or we run away from, you know, just depending upon what's going on and what has gone on in our life from birth forward. So if we're looking at that, then valuing who we are as individuals is where I'd like for us to begin, because, you know, that has been part of the mental, you know, the resilient. Am I a resilient person? Am I smart? Who am I? You know, those kind of things that we did intellectually. Now we're going to go over into that emotional leg. We're going to take some of that knowledge and put it in there, but we begin to react ideally from our heart and not so much from our intellect at this point. And we're looking at, do we value us personally? Or are we constantly looking for validation outside of us? And if we don't get it, then we're less than. Or have we learned to say, you know what? Even though, you know, my friends, my teachers, my parents, my siblings, my family members don't value who I am, I value who I am. So what do you think about that?
I think that's exactly what we, in order to find value in yourself, I think you need to, where do I go to find that?
Mm-hmm.
Where am I?
And how do you find it?
Again, my personal journey and what I try to do is help folks, again, knowingly, being aware that they're accessing that heart knowing. What does it look like?
Yeah.
What does it feel like when you've done that? When you're being informed at another level, another way of knowing, you know, and once you've done that, you start to realize it's like there's a whole nother part of me that's smarter than this brain, because my brain is only processing what the senses are taking in, and there's another part of me that is smart and smarter than this computer upstairs. Mm-hmm. You also, I think, at that point you realize intrinsically that you are of value. And you are unique, but at that particular level is the level that you connect with other people. You really
right.
connect with others. Is
right.
it that energetic, that
heart level.
That heart level.
Mm-hmm.
I think just for my own personal identity and being okay with who I am, that gets reinforced by consistently being able to dive into that pool
right.
and swim there comfortably.
Right. And even navigate the rocks that are there.
And navigate the things that are there. And then and that's a place, too, of healing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it goes back to resiliency. You know,
absolutely.
Is that we can have a lot of stones thrown at us. They can land up in that pool, that emotional pool. But if we can navigate around them and say, well, that's that person's opinion.
Yep.
Or, you know, this job is not the right job for me because of, and you can list the reasons, but this job over here is going to value what I bring to the table. And that's all about relationships. So the never-ending love story is a love story that you're having with you.
Well, I truly believe that. And I think we're all in that search.
Mm-hmm.
We're all... It's sort of like the perennial, the hero's journey. We're
mm-hmm.
all looking for something.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing you're looking for is a classic thing of looking for your identity. Who am I?
Who am I?
And I believe that the relationships, two things in a relationship that make it work is, number one, I start to have a better idea of who I am by getting to know who you are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you open up that, you know, that other person helps you, allows you
mm-hmm.
to be who you are.
Mm-hmm. And to grow into
and
that.
And to
maybe.
Grow into it. And there's going to be change.
Mm-hmm. Change is inevitable. We cannot escape it.
And one of the things I've told you, I've had students who trained yoga teachers and through these things that I'm doing. And I've had students come to me, and usually they're women, but I've had a number of guys too. And they said, you know, Doug, I know I've been doing this yoga and this meditation stuff for a while now, and man, my husband or my wife, my partner, they're really getting worried about me. They're getting worried about our relationships because they just think I feel like I'm distant. They feel like I'm detached. I'm distant.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, that's not unusual.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you are becoming detached. The word detachment in our language, in our culture, is a bad thing because it means like you don't care. And I said, actually, what's happening is, because it happened with me, is that I'm more compassionate. I have more range of motion for empathy and compassion
mm-hmm.
because every time you're speaking, I'm not raising my hand.
Right,
I'm actually listening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not reacting.
Right.
as much. I'm being less reactive, more responsive. And that makes a big difference. It's a huge difference. And so what that reflects is when your partner thinks that you're detached in a bad way, bad connotation, it means you're not reacting to the triggers that established your relationship to start with.
Right.
They measured your interest. You know, are you in the game still with me? If they can get you to react. If they can poke at you and you're going to react, then they say, okay, they still care. And I said, what you need to do is communicate with your partner what you're doing. Communicate what we're talking about right here. You're going through this growth process of learning how to be in the world a little differently. And tell them, look, you know, I want to dance with you. Mm-hmm. Can we just learn a new step?
Right. Instead of always doing the foxtrot, let's do the cha-cha.
Right. And learning, that's where your language, your, you know, your responsiveness versus reactiveness. You know, I always said, you know, if you're breaking up with someone, you really want to, whether it's, you know, a separation or a divorce or something, I said, you got to wait till you're not angry anymore. Because as long as you're angry, it means you still are reacting, you're caring. There's a caring there that you have to resolve that. Because, and then when you can separate or divorce or whatever you choose to do without being angry, but being, that's responding, not reacting.
Right, and that is probably then at that point coming from a heart understanding.
Exactly.
As opposed to an intellectual process.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. You know what, did you ever see the movie, and I'm sure you did, E.T.?
Oh, yeah.
And so at the very end of the movie, as E.T.'s leaving, you know, Elliot is so upset, you know, because he is so attached to his friend. But I think at that point, Elliot is at his head, you know, you're leaving me. What does that mean? I'm never going to see you again.
Right.
And so he's intellectualizing all of this. And E.T. takes that long finger and it lights up and he points to Elliot's heart. And he said, I will always be right there. And that's a part of coming from the heart, is understanding that we are all a part one, you know, we're part of one another. We're part of nature. We're part of life.
Yep.
And if we can go and be in the heart, then it doesn't become this intellectual process of I've lost someone.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's not that. It's they will always be a part of you.
Right.
Even if you're physically not able to be together.
I know we're almost going to play on that just because it just brought it to mind.
Sure.
And I think that may, when we getting later on to the spiritual side, that this is
you fill these legs simultaneously.
You do. But, you know, there's one thing, and you may have known people. I've not had a personal experience, a near-death experience, but I've known people personally who have.
I have.
And then you can speak to this. What I have, and I've read, like a lot of people have read about, you know, but there seems to be a common denominator in all these experiences. What people see, what people experience, you know, whatever they see a light or they see other people, whatever it is. When they come back, there's one thing they all seem to communicate, an unshakable conviction that there's more to this existence than we perceive with
more
our intellect.
More than physical.
More than physical. More than what the intellect can perceive.
Right.
And they've lost a fear of death. And I say that so that's a near-death experience with that conviction is there's more. I don't look forward to dying, but I know in my heart, because that's where I experience this, in that intuitive consciousness realm, that it's okay. I'm going to go on.
Right.
There's part of me that will go on, and we all do. And in these practices that I try to work with and things that we've been talking about, there's a way to have that same conviction by when we connect at that heart level, we know intrinsically that there's part of me that's not going to die.
Right.
And I call that a near-life experience.
Oh, that's a nice way to look at it too, because I think what happens for the majority of people is they hope that there is something beyond death, but we don't see it. And so if we can't see it, we can't intellectualize it and understand it. And we have plants that die. We have pets that die. We have people that we love that die, you know, and we visit a cemetery maybe. We think of them. We remember them. But they're not here. They're not physically in our space where we can see them.
Well, and then go just to bring it back to the original topic,
mm-hmm.
is that when we really connect at a heart level with another person,
mm-hmm.
it's that near-life experience where you now have a conviction that there's something here.
Mm-hmm.
We're connected at a level that is bigger
than
the two of us.
Yes.
It's bigger than the two of us,
yes.
But it is part of the two of us.
Yeah.
And it doesn't go on. When a spouse dies or a lover or a partner dies, the love doesn't die.
No. And the thing is that helping somebody understand that you can't see energy. You can feel it.
Mm-hmm.
We know that when we flip a switch, a light goes on,
yep.
ideally, unless
mm-hmm.
the light bulb has, you know, died.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, you know, we get light. And yet we can't see the electricity,
mm-hmm.
the energy running to the light bulb.
Yeah.
And you work with energy and I work with energy.
Yeah.
And so when I touch somebody and bring my healing touch into the relationship,
mm-hmm.
they feel it.
Oh,
they
yeah.
absolutely feel it. But I'm not using an apparatus.
Nope.
I am using the energy that is within me. And that's what comes from the heart. If your heart's centered and you're giving love, which is what we're talking about, you know, the never-ending love story that is us, and it's the love we give to others, then you can't see it, but it's there, and it's our gift.
It is, and I would just say one add-on to what you just mentioned, that energy ideally is not coming from you, it's coming through you.
Through you, yeah, absolutely.
Because if you're using your own energy, it's going to be
dissipate,
it's
yeah.
going to dissipate,
yeah.
But if you learn to be an open conduit,
right.
and that energy
right.
is what? Love.
It is.
That's what it is. We're conduits.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's flowing in a that's another thing. In a relationship, if both people are open conduits for that love,
mm-hmm.
and not getting blockages like a garden hose, you know, if it's got
a tweak in it,
it's got a kink in it, or
uh-huh.
it's got a clotted dirt in it, it's
mm-hmm.
gonna
right.
you know, mess up the flow there. But if
right.
and I think that relationships flow. And I said instead of. I think that's it. I like a dance. It's like a dance.
Mm-hmm.
It flows.
It flows.
Sometimes you lead, sometimes you follow, but you're dancing. You're flowing back and forth.
Well, and if you use flow as the visual here, if you've ever been around a really pretty stream or a
mm-hmm.
creek, you do have boulders in it.
Sure.
You do have, you know, maybe an area where a beaver has built a little bit of a dam. It doesn't stop the flow.
No, we just navigate it.
You navigate
the flow.
And so if you can navigate from your heart and you realize that life is going to throw you curveballs,
yep.
then that 80-20, that understanding mm-hmm. that I need to try to get out of my head and find all the reasons why something isn't good,
right.
and get into my heart and realize that there's a lot of positives here, and try to stay there. And so then when you're dealing with a child who's having difficulties, a parent who's having difficulties,
mm.
you know, a relationship like spouses where there's difficulties, you're not willing to throw the towel in. You're trying to look at how do I get to my heart to see this, and how do I keep my table balanced? You know,
mm-hmm.
have I put in the work that I needed to emotionally, which is where we're on that leg? Have I done what I needed to mentally share, you know, from an intellectual? I'm growing, you know, in my knowledge base, and I want to share with you what I'm discovering.
Mm-hmm.
But are you staying connected?
Yep.
You know, and we're just
yep.
looking at these first two legs right now. I want to touch base, too, on belonging for just a minute.
Okay.
And, you know, what is your sense of belongingness? And I don't even know that that is a word, but I think we have this belief that not necessarily that we belong to one another, but that we belong to life, maybe,
mm.
is a good way of saying that. That if we're here and we're occupying space, that we have a sense of we belong here. There is something that we are to do that is bigger than who we are individually.
I totally believe that. And I always say to students and on this topic is, most of the time you hear about people looking, you know, what's the meaning of life?
What's my purpose?
Well, those are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, quit looking for the meaning of life. Mm-hmm. Looking for meaning is an intellectual event.
Right.
You will never get the answer here.
But, you have to still come from the heart to find the
purpose,
answer.
But purpose is a different thing. Right. I don't know what... You know, there's a story about the Buddha was giving one of his talks on something. In big crowd, allegedly. And he was going to give a talk, okay? And it was about the meaning of life or whatever the title. And he got up in front of the people and just held up a flower. Didn't say a word. And everybody was looking at him like, what's that about? And there was one guy in the back that he could tell by the look on his face, he got it. It's like, what's the meaning of that flower? It doesn't have a meaning in the sense of, you're trying to build a construct, an intellectual construct, where flower fits in.
Equals
this. Right. And it's not, but what is the purpose of the flower? Well, you could write volumes on the purpose of a flower.
Exactly.
So what is our purpose? And I think our purpose is exactly what we're talking about here, is we're here to connect with the heart. Mm-hmm. We navigate, we're part of all this. The thread that runs through it, everything that we feel we belong to it because we understand that what happens to me, what happens to you, happens to me.
Exactly. And I think you talked about the person that was in the police
department.
That's a beautiful way to, explain this.
Joseph Campbell, a mythologist, related a story in one of his books about a police officer. This is a real thing, a real event. Police officer called to a potential suicide on a bridge. Mm-hmm. So he pulls up and there's a guy standing on the rail ready to jump off the bridge. The cop gets out of the car and rushes over and flings himself out over the railing to grab this guy just as his feet are leaving the railing. And for a few moments, they're both dangling. And finally, more police come and they help and they rescue the guy. Mm-hmm. And another police officer, maybe it was a reporter, someone asked the policeman, what were you thinking? That guy was, he was about ready. He'd go, so what were you thinking? You almost killed yourself. He says, I have no idea what I was thinking. He said, I wasn't. But for one brief moment, I knew that whatever happened to that young man was happening to me as well.
Yeah.
And he broke through, I call it the sense of duality.
Mm-hmm.
And realize that at a certain level, we're all connected.
We're all connected.
And that's the belonging.
Right.
I belong here. You know, right. You can walk in the woods, you can sit on the beach or whatever, and you say, yeah, I belong here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's part of who we are.
And it's at that vibrational frequency where you begin to understand that matter exists in everything, and we're all part of it.
Yeah. And it's not belonging to, it's belonging with.
And maybe this is a good time to talk about surrendering to the relationship on this emotional level, that when we surrender to something like a relationship, in your mind, what does that mean?
Well, funny that's a great concept, because that's one of the things is that, being in the Army, the surrender is the S word. that's not the word, we're not, but always, or retreating.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And always funny because I hold retreats and I was like, retreat was not a good word.
No, because you backed up.
Yeah. And I remember there was a general, Civil War general, that said, I wasn't retreating, I was advancing in another direction. And I really like that.
That is good, yes.
So surrender, because it has a negative word, it can be negative, like detachment.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that what you're doing, surrendering to the relationship, is not giving in, like you're in a battle.
Mm-hmm.
It's allowing the other person to dance, to lead the dance, maybe.
Right.
But you're surrendering to something bigger. You realize that thing that holds you together is bigger than your individual needs at the time. And
does
surrender,
compromise kind of work in
absolutely.
Here?
Absolutely.
Because,
it's all a compromise.
Yeah, I was going to say, there are going to be moments when, the bigger picture is maybe what the other person needs or wants.
Yep.
And so, you give. But knowing that you will also be receiving at some point down the road. And so it is that dance.
It's a dance. It's giving in, not giving up.
Mm-hmm.
So surrender really is giving in has a negative thing too. I have a story that we had mentioned. A friend of mine actually was my, a guy did some filming for me. And he was in that 35, 36 year age group. And he was dating a woman. And, he was asking for some advice. He says, you know, she wants me to go to this party, and it's really important to her. I don't want to go to the party. And, you know, he's going through this whole thing, sounding, you know, kind of self-centered a little bit there, you know.
He was 35,
right? And so, you know, he said, I don't want to go to the party. And I said, well, you know, maybe why don't you give it a shot? Oh, I don't like those people and da, 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 you know, the whole. And I finally said, well, if it's important, why don't you just try it? And he said, okay, I'm going to go, but I'm going to bring my phone. I'm just going to sit in the corner with my earphones. I'm going to just watch the game, listen to the game. I said, okay, try it. So he felt, because he felt I didn't want her to win.
Right, so he felt it was a win-lose.
Well, it was also part of that male...
Uh-huh. She's telling me what to
she's
do.
Trying to, she's trying. Yeah, know. She's not going to control me. She's not... All these kinds of things.
Right,
you know,
right,
talk
right,
about
right.
rants and chants, you know.
Right.
I'm a man. I can do what I want. You're not... You know, I'm not going to be dragged around by a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he goes... He went to the party. So I talked to him a few days later, and I said, well, how'd that thing go? How'd that party go? He says, well, I got to tell you the truth. He said, I got there. I didn't even bring my phone in to the house. And he said, I ended up having more fun at the party than she did.
Yeah. And so he gave himself permission to experience.
He gave himself permission, and it gave... So that giving in seemed like a loss.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny, gain and loss. Mm-hmm. I think I lost something, but I actually gained something.
And look what he gained in terms of their relationship.
Absolutely.
Even if they didn't stay together for the rest of their lives... At that moment, she saw him in a different place than if he'd gone in with the phone and the earbuds.
Absolutely. And he also, I think, just got a couple notches up on his emotional intelligence.
Yes, he did.
You know, I think it's many of us are not, we need emotional sobriety. Because we get a little kind of drunk on these things that are, you know, have kind of distorted our thinking.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we're going to pause. We're going to do part two of this wonderful discussion about having the never-ending love story of your lifetime with another person, but also with yourself, and what that means as we look toward healthier relationships that might eventually shape the world that we live in right now.
Boomers Forever Young is really making a name for themselves as an exciting nutritional company with products that really work. People from all over the country are starting to take notice. Their whole person approach to health and wellness, combined with their unique array of powerful natural health products, are setting them apart from all the other companies in the nutrition industry. Their customers love the one-on-one free consultations and the results they experience. Sound a little too good to be true? Then go online to boomerboost.com today and sign up for a free consultation with a product specialist, or just give us a call at 1-800-861-4609. Again, that's boomerboost.com, or call 1-800-861-4609 to join the thousands already experiencing the benefits of Boomers Forever Young products.